times live on the air several different ways. You can call by phone, toll free in the United States and Canada at 888-863-2722. If you have internet access, point your browser to www.feettofire.com. That's www.feet2fire.com. And check the left of the screen for the How to Participate text and click. You can then choose Direct Chat with James or join the official group chat room. You can send email to James at f2f@innersights.com. And now, live from Chicago, here is the Black Knight of Talk Radio, James Arthur Yancic.
All right, we have with us back for another talk, we have Lionel Parkinson. In fact, I chuckle every time I see his picture because my brother said, this guy looks like Chuck Norris. He does. But Lionel Parkinson is a document examiner and author of the book The Holy Virus, which you can now actually get from him for $5 shipping and handling. So, I mean, there's not a lot of excuses, hardcover book, to check it out, and it may just change your whole perspective on the purposes and meanings behind things in the Bible. You might have thought there was contradictions, and you wondered how God could be so mean and killing and blood and all this. Well, Lionel has figured out that perhaps, just perhaps, these things were interjected by the Babylonians when they had captured the Jews and kind of rewrote their Bible. And that's where that comes from. And the Romans had their turn in 325 to take the things that Jesus taught. Jesus came to reset those things back, and they had their turn on that. Anyway, he comes back every so often to talk on various subjects. You can see the Holy Virus, holyvirus.net, all kinds of documents and stuff you can read and see there and listen to. So welcome back to the show, Lionel.
Hey, thanks again. I always appreciate being on this program.
I can't help but look at your picture and see Chuck Norris now. So, I mean, my brother did that. I had to give him, but that's it for now. So anyway, welcome back to the show.
Yes, I do have to say something about that picture. That was after I had been in Jamaica for about seven weeks, and I had no shaver. So that's why I had the beard and mustache, and I appeared to them down there. Everybody called me Chuck as well. So.
Well, I bet you got a good attention when you spoke. I mean, because you start talking to people down there, they're going to go, is that Chuck Norris? I better listen to him just in case.
Yeah, I had to sign autographs and get my picture taken with people, so that's how convincing it was. But down then, I told them not to burst their bubble. I just told them I was his little brother, Buck.
Buck Norris. There you go.
Yeah, so, yeah, any way that the Jamaicans could make a dollar off of me, they would back then.
So what is your topic here for this week?
Well, I wanted to just briefly cover some important points that I've covered in the past, but I wanted to also break away completely from the subject, but yet drive it back home on how this system, the Babylonian-Roman system, has invaded and held captive the people within this nation, in England and around the world, under the judicial system, but and how the law dictionaries have literally educated me on why they adopted this system and why it goes so contrary to the very commandments of Christ. And just to kind of cover an important point that I've left off last month, when I was talking about the modern commercial law is based on the ancient Babylonian codes, I had dug up a very important piece of literature coming right out of the Jewish Encyclopedia on page 665, and it states the essence of what Judaism is today and why it was changed. And this is the quote, and this starts immediately after the destruction of the temple in 70 AD by the Romans, and it states this: with the destruction of the temple, the Sadducees disappeared altogether, leaving the regulation of all Jewish affairs in the hands of the Pharisees. Henceforth, Jewish life was regulated by the teachings of the Pharisees. The whole history of Judaism was reconstructed from the Pharisaic point of view, and a new aspect was given to the Sanhedrin of the past. Phariseeism has shaped the character of Judaism and the life and the thought of the Jew for all the future. That's exactly how it reads out of the Jewish Encyclopedia, 1905, by Funk and Wagnalls, page 665. They're essentially stating that Judaism is nothing more than a Pharisaic religion. This was the very system that Jesus referred to as, or the sect as, serpents. If this being the case, the Pharisees come right out of that Babylonian Roman era where they actually took on that master-slave code system that would literally enslave human beings. For instance, even in the Bible, the Pharisees admitted that we have no king but Caesar, as referring to Pilate in their discussion about Jesus. Now, to me, this is a very important point, because we're told in churches today that Israel has been brought back together in 1948 as some kind of sign from God that Jesus is going to come back, and this is essential. But that does not make any logical sense to me. Why would God bring back a very system that Jesus condemned? This is just a question that a red flag that goes up in my mind, and it's one I just wanted to put out there. From a Jewish point of view, in their Jewish encyclopedia, they're saying we're the modern-day Pharisees. This may explain why they adhere to the Babylonian Talmud more than any book that they read. This goes back again to that whole era when the Babylonian Talmud was starting to be written, and it reconstructed the very history of the Jews through the Old Testament books, from Samuel's, Kings, Chronicles, Ezra, and Nehemiah. All of those books were written well after the time they were taken into captivity by authors that we really don't know. We just take it by faith that some nice benevolent authors, as churches commonly refer them to us as men of God, when in fact I find in these very scriptures they were nothing like men of God. They were speaking from points of view of the Babylonian practices. They incorporated their rituals into the Jewish culture. In fact, they pretty much just gutted the whole Jewish culture and forced the remaining survivors after the captivity to adhere to the Babylonian ways and change their borders, language, and cultures, and even their names. And then later on, King Cyrus takes over Babylon in a nonviolent way and worships the Babylonian god in front of all the people, and he is accepted as the so-called anointed savior of Babylon. And then he allows the Jews to go back to Jerusalem, and a new temple is built for them eventually in 516 B.C. So that's just an encapsulated picture of history of what happened. Bringing this into a whole new different topic now, how this invaded our judicial system, reading from Black's Law Dictionary, under the word fictio, which is another word for our word fiction, in Roman law, it states this, in Roman law, in pleading, foreigners were given fictional standing through Roman citizenship. The object of the fiction was to give the court jurisdiction. This I found to be very prevalent in England and the United States. Our judicial system literally adopted this old Roman practice that in order for you to stand before any courtroom, whether it's a magistrate, appellant, or even a Supreme Court, you can only enter in with a fictitious standing. And the only one that can speak for you is an attorney. An attorney is the only one that has the right to use the copyrighted rules and regulations of the court. You are not allowed to use them. Not without permission, of course. This is quite interesting because already they're treating the human being like a person that cannot speak for themselves. And this is why they don't want you to try and defend yourself in a courtroom, because it wouldn't matter what type of evidence you submit, it will automatically be rejected because they, by law, will not allow you to inject any evidence without an attorney or without permission. In fact, people don't even know how to even ask for permission in a courtroom to submit evidence.
Well, you probably aren't familiar with the Paul Pantone case we've been following on the show here, where somebody in Utah who he's an inventor of an alternative way to burn fuels that would save an awful lot of money and be cleaner, and he was incarcerated and was assigned a lawyer who didn't really do much and allowed him to be put into a nut house for mandatory psychotropic drug treatment, which is like unheard of, and he wouldn't even allow him to have another lawyer, and wouldn't listen to the evidence brought by Paul Pantone. I mean, here's basically a case you're talking about right here that just happened. He just finally got out, and he's putting together a case. I'm assuming by some hints and back at what would happen to him, but he didn't. In other words, he didn't count, just like you're saying.
Yes, that's. I've always maintained if a person's going to speak in court, they're going to have to not have an attorney because they take a sworn oath to uphold the court, not that person. The problem.
Oh, I never thought of it. I watched the old Perry Mason shows. And he's an officer to court, and I never thought of that in the negative sense that you're bound to the court, even if the court is wrong or bad or whatever. So that's a good point.
Yes, they will not. So the court system is rigged in such a way that you cannot submit evidence as a living, breathing human being because they can only recognize a fiction, and because they operate by fiction of law. And any law, and I should explain that this is a very important point. In Black's Law Dictionary, just because someone writes down a law, it does not become a law. What actually makes a law is consent. And it states that in the law dictionary like this, that consent makes the law. A contract is only law where the parties agree to be bound by it. Now, of course, in a courtroom, they get consent through, it escapes me right now, at the very beginning when they're asking a person to plead. I forget the name of that it's practically a ritual, but they make sure there's always an attorney right by their side to plead guilty or not guilty, so it doesn't matter what direction they go. But a person is actually supposed to state that they don't want anybody to plead for them. They don't authorize anyone. They don't consent to have anyone authorized to plead for them, and to reiterate their own law in front of them that you are not allowed to use their rules and regulations because it would be a copyright infringement. Therefore, you cannot plead because it would be indeed a copyright infringement. It kind of throws a wrench in their whole system. But they do have to operate by consent, and the American Law Institute backs that up, the Declaration of Independence, even though the U.S. is pretty much a rogue nation now anyway, but under social contract it states this: governments must therefore rest on the consent of the governed. Declaration of Independence says it like this: governments are instituted among men, deriving their only powers from the consent of the governed. In other words, if a person says that they come under the Constitution, right there they consented.
You see that in the taxes, of course, that you signed the tax return. You're so certifying this true. I mean, it's like when you say guilty or innocent, you're limited by... They set the structure up, and you have to answer yes or no. It's like if I said to you, are you still beating your wife, yes or no?
Right.
I mean, how do you answer that, yes or no? I mean, if you're not and never did, how do you answer that?
Yeah, a true contract, and they know that a true contract, in order for it to be binding, it has to be fully understood and agreed upon by both parties. Well, no one in their right mind would agree to any government one-sided rigged contract that is being issued out to the masses out here. But nonetheless, everybody goes ahead and signs it, because in order to do that, you have to have a birth certificate, a social security number, in order to go out and get a job and earn their fictitious money. So it is a very controlling, one-way rigged system that we're in. There is a way out, but on this program, I want to stay on point.
Okay.
And how that affects us in the world of finance and the control that they have over the financial mechanisms, such as Wall Street. Even back in 1812, when Meyer Rothschild said this, and I always like to use this quote, he states it like this: "Permit me to issue and control the money of a nation, and I care not who makes its laws. Will enforce unemployment and hunger imposed on the masses because of the power we have to create shortages of food. We create the right to capital, or create the right of capital, to rule more surely than it was given to the real aristocrats." This is a guy that died in 1812, and yet he just described the situation in America right now. We're controlled by a federal reserve system. The money is completely unbacked by anything, therefore it is nothing more than fiction of money. The judicial system operates by fiction of law, as stated in Black's Law Dictionary. And the government is not even authorized by anything that... In order for them to enter into their own government, they have to swear an oath in violation of the very commandment that Jesus warned people not to do. Otherwise, you'd enter into condemnation.
You know, I don't mean to cut you off, but I never thought about his warning in that concept. I thought about it, like, be careful if you swear because of the chances of you failing in that, rise up or whatever. But I never thought of him warning you not to be involved in the system, and that makes way more sense than just the traditional, if I can use the term, application.
Yeah, I didn't catch on to that either until I began to realize that when I had to testify in court on many cases and on depositions outside of courts, I began to realize that they were asking me to raise my right hand and swear on the Bible. And while I was well versed in this particular commandment of Jesus to swear not at all, lest you fall under condemnation, lest you fall into evil. And I checked that against the Black's Law Dictionary, and it literally led me to the words going into hell. To swear an oath was to literally consign yourself to hell based on Black's Law Dictionary. So I thought, well, this is interesting. This whole system, it seems to be based upon the occult and that master-slave system that goes back to Babylon, where Nebuchadnezzar would use a contract to bind people's conscience under God and to the government, where he combined both God and government together. And this is what Rome did as well, where Caesars would literally become the son of God. And they would use these contracts to bind people. So I studied this against the Essene writings, and they too were very much against signing contracts under a sworn oath for this very reason, because it would put them into this fictitious standing and would not allow them to be under God anymore. It would put them completely under Roman citizenship, which is really what people wanted back then anyway, so they could go out and do commerce.
You know, it also, it also puts light to the verse, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and unto God what is God's. That puts a whole other kind of layer on that one, too.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, and if one really spends enough time on that, they'll begin to realize we're talking about which venue are you confessing to be under all the time. And this is why I've always...
It also talks about the verse where it talks about there's no one can serve two masters, God and mammon. And that whole mammon aspect kind of gets into the whole money system, not just money itself or material, but like the whole system.
Right.
I mean, you're really, you know, your interpretation on there, I mean, what I think is good about it is that you have these very simple, powerful backups that pop right in out of the same book that you're warning people of. Has been altered. It itself is just witness against the alteration, which, of course, being your job as a document editor, I mean, that's kind of the point.
When I can find it in the law dictionaries to substantiate this idea that when a person swears an oath, they are actually entering into this fictitious venue that man has created for those to be entrapped. That's the way I look at it, and these contracts become the instruments for that that venue, and that's why all courts have to operate by contracts. All that man with the black robe is going to look at is what is being submitted before him, and he's going to take a look at that. He's going to look at names, and he's going to look at the venue, and he's going to make a determination. Does this name fall under my jurisdiction? And he's going to ask, do you understand what you signed? Do you understand the charges against you? Do you understand the penalty? Do you understand all these things? In other words, he's trying to get verbal confirmation from the defendant or the plaintiff. Are you under my jurisdiction to judge you? And that's his job, is to render a judgment over people with fictitious standing. Of course, they're not going to explain the nature of the case like I just have, but people, it would be nice that people at least understood what they're entering into when they're signing these contracts, so that for future generations, maybe the church might want to extract themselves out of this contract for the purposes of getting themselves back under God.
Hold on there. We'll take a break and come back in another half hour. It kind of reminds me of that movie, where people put on the sunglasses and they can see that some people are reptilian. It Lives, or think it is, or something like
yeah.
that. Yeah. It kind of reminds me that these, when you're signing this contract, you see a human being in front of you signing a legal contract, but behind it is this whole hideous other situation. So it's kind of cool to hear this. Well, not cool, but it's good to know before you do it. But hold on. We will come back and continue talking with Lionel Parkinson, the author of Holy Virus, The Holy Virus. HolyVirus.net is the website. I really recommend you check it out. We'll be back after this. Are you getting your greens? I'm James Othiancic, the Black Knight of Talk Radio. Now you can have your greens and drink them too with Inner Food by Inner Health Botanicals. Inner Food is 70% organic and 100% natural without fillers and is a whole food product totally assimilated by the body. Inner Food is spirulina, chlorella, dulse, kelp, spinach, alfalfa, barley, wheatgrass, rosehip, beetroot, and much more in real amounts. Not just a sprinkle to fill out an inflated but impotent list of ingredients. Just mix a tablespoon in your protein shake or in your favorite fruit juice and you are good to go and go and go. Other greens on the shelf typically weigh 300 grams and sell for between $35 and $70. Inner Food is a full 400 grams, 33% more, for $39.95 plus shipping. Simply go to our website, feedtofire.com, and click on any Inner Health Botanical banner and you're ready to order. Or call 866-762-9238 and be sure to mention you heard them on Feet to the Fire. Enter Food, building health from the insides out.
The Meru Project has discovered that the sequence of letters in the Hebrew text of Genesis reveals a simple yet extraordinary and unexpected series of geometric models whose intrinsic meaning describes processes inherent in the fields as diverse as embryology, modern physics, and consciousness studies. Our goal is to help bring persons of all faith and no faith, technical persons, academic persons, and especially the young to a point of genuine respect for the Abrahamic traditions. Visit www.meru.org for more information.
Make sure you stay tuned, because you're listening to Feet to the Fire.
Million Americans suffer from sleep deficit. I'm James Othiancic, the Black Knight of Talk Radio, and I'd like to tell you about Earth Pulse Magnetic Field Supplementation. While using your Earth Pulse device, I found that I drifted off to sleep faster, I slept deeper, and I woke up more refreshed, and it does much, much more. Call them right now at 888-211-7888 or check out their website at www.earthpulse.net. But wait, there's more. When you buy a new digitally programmed Earth Pulse version 4 magnetic supplementation device and use the special Feet to the Fire coupon code F2F, you'll receive an instant $50 savings. No rebates to get lost in the mail. Just $50 more in your pocket on your way to better health. 888-211-7888 or check out their website at earthpulse.net and use the special Feet to the Fire coupon code F2F. Earth Pulse. Deeper, more restful sleep or your money back.
Straight out the top.
James live on the air several different ways. You can call by phone, toll-free in the United States and Canada at 888-863-2722. If you have Internet access, point your browser to www.feettofire.com. That's www.feet2fire.com. And check the left of the screen for the How to Participate text and click. You can then choose Direct Chat with James or join the official group chat room. You can send email to James at f2f@intersights.com. And now, live from Chicago, here is the Black Knight of Talk Radio, James Arthur Yancic.
I wonder if the term everlasting love is in... the law books. We are talking about Lionel Hampton. Lionel Hampton. From Chuck Norris to Lionel Hampton. We're talking about Lionel Parkinson. HolyVirus.net is the website. The Holy Virus is the book. And Lionel is talking to us about how the Babylonian law system got into existence that we are still under, enslaved under to this day. Welcome back, Lionel.
I like the last name Hampton better.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like a disease.
Disease, right. So. That's what happens when you're doing eight things at once. Only part of your brain can work, and it has to do the best it can. So, anyway, welcome back.
No, that's fine. I'd like to just reiterate the word deed, according to these law dictionaries, and I always like to go according to what their definition is. And I look at several law dictionaries, but the word deed is a legal document. It's used to grant a right under seal. Deeds are contracts as they require the mutual consent of more than one person. Now you imply that word deed into a statement that Jesus makes in John chapter 3 verse 19. This whole subject becomes a little bit more clear when he says this, and this is condemnation, that light is come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. Probably he was referring to contracts, because everything in law moves through contracts, even back in his day during Rome. Even in Babylon, the Babylonian law developed to its fullest extent the idea of a contract. Almost any possible business transaction was reduced to the form of a contract, and it was executed with the same formalities, with witnesses, notary, signature. Thus the points as to deeds, sales, mortgages, loans, banking. When I'm saying this, I'm reading right out of those that have studied this culture. And I'm really surprised. I always assumed people just ran around and traded with beads and rocks and lived a life of, you know, just above the caveman. That's the way we always perceive them. But they actually operate in the same kind of law system that we do today. And this really kind of shocked me when I studied this, because we're dealing with people that lived, you know, 2,500 years ago. 2,500 years ago, they were doing the same thing we're doing today. They created a all-powerful government state system, called it God, and bound people's conscience to contracts. And every action that they performed in their physical life became bound in their fictitious life on that contract. This is a mind-boggling realization that we haven't really stepped forward and changed anything for 2,500 years. We are still in that same Babylonian Roman culture.
Well, I mean, from their point of view, you might look at it as, hey, it works. It's worked for 1,000 years. They're not about to stand up and change it, so they're going to keep on keeping on as long as we are blinded by all of this.
How this comes all into perspective of us today is to see and sit back and watch how the governments have now moved hand in hand with Wall Street, and I'm watching how the shadow banking industry has now, through their collateralized debt obligations and CDSs, credit default swaps, have literally gambled people's savings accounts, even though it's all fictitious money that we're earning today. It's all digital. They have literally gambled far beyond what people have been able to save, and these bailouts are simply to shore up the balance sheets of the banks. It is not really creating the inflation in the economy, because the money is not going to get loaned out into the economy. It will never see the light of day in the economy. It is simply a terrible scam that I'm seeing coming around the corner, where the masses are told that all these trillions of dollars is going to create a massive amount of inflation, and we're going to see everything shoot up in price, when actually we're just seeing a little blip up for the next down plunge in the stock market and commodities, and people are getting sucked right back into the belief that they're going to double their money in the stock market and gold and silver and all these things that are about ready at the highest prices they've ever been, excluding the stock market, of course, where they've swapped out all the bad stocks with fresh new loser stocks.
It seems like the stock market is not an investment to go up. It goes up and then they reap it off. It goes down and they reap it all, and then it goes back up again. It's like growing crops.
Yeah, Wall Street's mantra is that markets move randomly and reflect the collective wisdom of investors. But the truth is quite the opposite. The government's visible hand and insiders control markets and manipulate them up and down for profit. All of them, including the stocks, bonds, commodities, and currencies. And on March 18, 1989, Ronald Reagan put out an executive order. It was 12631, and this created what was called the Working Group on the Financial Markets. Again, everything kind of starts out with a good intent. However, this group consists of five major players. One, the president himself, the Treasury Secretary, which happens to be that guy that, according to Black's Law Dictionary, is in charge of the benevolent word called hell, known as the Treasury Department, which would be Mr. Geithner. The third fella in this group of officials would be the Fed Chairman, being Bernanke, the Securities Exchange Commission Chairman, which his name escapes me right now, but when they created this, the Securities Exchange Commission back in the 1930s, its sole function was to make sure that this buying on margin and highly leveraged instruments would never enter back into the market at all. That was its sole function, to make sure that another style 29 crash would never occur. Well, back in 1985, they brought back all these highly leveraged instruments, and everybody could gamble way beyond what they were able to save. And they even took it a step further. Banks could actually gamble people's savings accounts way beyond what they had in the bank in the first place. And these were called the credit default swaps and the collateralized debt obligations. These are the very dangerous derivatives that have ran up to what some believe to be somewhere between 600 trillion to 1 quadrillion, which isn't enough digital money on.
I like that old saying by Dirksen, who was a senator in Illinois in the 50s, I think the saying came out, maybe 60s, a billion here and a billion there. Pretty soon you're talking about a lot of money. Well, we're well past the billions. We're into the trillions. And, you know, what are we going to go into, the quadrillion and quintillion? I mean, you know, at some point, isn't it like infinite?
It is. It's gotten to the point where no one even knows how to figure it out anymore. It's like I said, they're gambling way beyond what anybody could ever pay back. And these bailouts were nothing but a lie. And I'm afraid that it is left the impression on a lot of people that we're going to go into an inflationary depression, when in fact I believe it's going to be deflationary, and they'll wipe out the masses, especially the middle class. I think it's a very troubling time. I've been watching this very closely ever since November of last year, keeping a close eye on it. I'm seeing that we've got several more months of the same kind of thing going on, but I think the banking system is going to be nationalized before too long, and we'll probably see withdrawal limits on everybody, where people can't get access to their money anymore. It will just be withdrawal limits, you know, something like maybe 500. This will kill retail from coast to coast in a way that people can't conceive right now. When this goes down, I have no idea. It could be weeks, could be months, it could be a good year or two out, but it appears that this is going to be the case. They're going to confiscate people's accounts to hide the fact that they've already gambled their remaining savings away through these highly leveraged shadow banking industry practices. And by putting limit withdrawals, it doesn't matter how high they put the FDIC protection limits up. If you only have access to a little bit of your money per month, it's nothing short of a confiscation. So I suspect that this is what's coming down the road: bank holidays and limit withdrawals. Not a pretty picture for retailing.
No, not at all. And since this is a retail nation,
70% of the nation runs off of the consumer buying, and you take away 90% of its access to money. It would be devastating, absolutely devastating. But I'm just kind of being, for me, I would get as much physical money out of the banks as you possibly can, get it under your control, and why not? You're not earning any high interest in it anyway. So, it's just something I'm putting out because I don't think anybody's really putting out the facts. I'm seeing a lot of misinformation on gold right now. The stock market is being, again, they're utilizing the same pump and pump the markets up so they can dump them and steal the money from all the 401ks that everybody's siphoning their paychecks into the stock market. You know, on a biweekly and monthly basis. So they've already been kind of wiped out. Yet nobody's really learning their lesson. So for whoever cares to listen to me on this issue, I've always been able to avoid these dangers, and I'm seeing another big danger around the corner. And I think it would be wise for people to get money under their own control and not allow the bankers to control it.
Well, as you say this, I've been having several guests on. Excuse me, I got a frog in my throat. I had a guest on last week, this week, and a lot of people are pursuing this. What you bring to it, though, is not simply explaining to us about the Fed. What you bring to us is the ancient origin and persistence of this stuff, which is very important. But I tend to think that people are waking up to this. Now, how much, how fast? I mean, if you watch the news, no. But, I mean, the Internet news and alternative publications and all that are making up a larger percentage of the news media. So I'm hoping that your message goes out in a harmonic chorus with other people and really shows us that we must change this the way things are done here, like this this dramatically and this basically, or there's really no hope for a bigger picture?
Ideally, I would like the masses to exchange their, you know, Federal Reserve notes and go back to gold and silver, to an honest monetary system. But to be honest, the government is not going to be honest again and bind themselves to an honest monetary system. So they are in league with a Wall Street financial group that will control the price of gold and silver, I think, downward from here. I was a very animate in telling people to buy at the $300 and $400 an ounce level. Now I'm animate to tell them to get out of it while everybody else is telling them it's going to double in price. I'm seeing just the opposite. I'm looking at demand and supply figures where the demand for it is only about 1,600 tons a year, but the supply is well over 5,000 tons.
Of gold you're talking about?
Yeah.
Now, it's interesting. It's interesting because people have looked at gold as being immune and all that, but one of the things talked about in the Bible, and I don't know if this is from the Babylonian Passide or if it got through, about how in these end times in Revelation, it talks about gold and silver and all those being worthless, and that actually food would be the only real thing worth anything, but that people can't, gold can never be worthless. But what you're saying leads to the possibility of the gold being bad and the money being bad at the same time.
It's possible. I don't see the Federal Reserve's in a deflationary depression. The dollar actually becomes very strong. In inflationary times, your commodities always shoot up because there's physical and digital money shooting into the economy where people are actually getting their hands on the money and going out and buying cars and homes. And, you know, if I saw the trillions of dollars being given out to the people in forms of rebate checks, I would reverse my whole outlook on this issue, because I know that they would go out and buy more gold, they would buy more silver, they'd buy more cars and more houses, and would probably pay off their homes completely if they would have used that bailout money for the right reason.
Right,
it would have been highly inflationary.
We have a question coming in. You mentioned about deflationary depression. He said, this is from Stanley, who's listening. He says, why would it be deflationary depression when the Fed has the power to print unlimited amounts of money? So in other words, if it got deflation, why would they just print more money?
Well, they're always printing out money. What we're experiencing now is the fact that that money that is so-called being created is not getting into the hands of the people so that they can make their mortgage and their rents and car payments. All that, these trillions of dollars that they're creating and giving to the banks, is simply to shore up all the lost money of the people that can't pay their mortgages and their cars. And that's the reason why your car companies are failing. Your financial institutes are failing. Every business out there cannot raise enough capital. They're liquidating everything that they can get their hands on, trying to get their hands on real cash. This is what's happening. The world is going into a deflationary meltdown, and nobody's seeing it for what it really is. We've already seen $60 to $80 trillion leave the real estate markets around the world. That money was never realized, but it was always looked upon as if real estate was always going to go up, and believed by many that it was always going to go up. But the fact is that the world ran out of buyers, credible buyers, and it created such a bubble that it literally sapped a lot of the so-called money that everybody thought was going to come into the market, never really did. In other words, people can't go out and work for money fast enough to keep on buying things at these high levels. So everything crashed on them.
So, in other words, we can have a lot of money, and thus you'd have the inflation, but that a lot of money is going to be in the hands of a few, so that the money is in the hands of the other people, it's going to be acting in a deflationary manner?
Yeah, the, like I say, the trillions never, that the $13 trillion that the government and the Fed has claimed that they've created to shore up.
I don't mean to interrupt, but something just popped in my head. I was wondering why they put through this tax break for people buying houses. And I was trying to think, like, it doesn't seem right that they really want to help you. So why are they doing this, which is helping people? But I just realized that people who buy a house are going to be entering into the mortgage system. So they're really giving you a break and getting back three times what you're borrowing in interest. So it's kind of like a sale. Yeah, you come in and you buy this, but you're going to end up paying 300% more than what you bought it for. And so, okay, we'll give you a little off the top to get you in our system.
Right, exactly. It's another rigged contract that will bind people under a monetary system that they are never able to really pay back unless, of course, they're willing to work three, four jobs. And try and pay it all back. But at a time when people in this country are losing their jobs at between 600 and 700,000 a week, this is going to weigh heavy on the retail end when people are more dependent on a state unemployment check than the job that they once had. This is why I believe everything will be deflationary. It will break the states because they can't get their money, hands on the money. The money is essentially just going to the banks to shore up their balance sheets that they have already indicated that they're dead broke. They cannot operate as a functional bank anymore. So this is just a game that is being played on the masses right now to make them feel that the banking industry is okay when in fact, and I believe in several months, so now they're going to have to declare bank holidays and start really confiscating people's money because this whole idea of creating money, and this money that they're creating is really being stolen out of the stock market through short selling by this plunge protection team that I just mentioned. They're the ones going in there and stealing the money through selling down, like, for instance, the Dow going from 14,000 down to 6,500, over a course of about a year in 2007, 2008. This is how governments steal money from the masses. And they're using a lot of that to shore up these banks because the people can't pay their mortgages anymore. And that's why they're walking away from their homes.
Some people are walking away. I mean, they've been paying for 20 years or whatever. They're literally walking away from the home. I mean, some people are trying to sell the home and can't sell it because of the market, and they're sort of like literally leaving their house. It's amazing.
Yeah, I know a lot of people that got caught in that. I tried to warn them not to buy a home. That's why I sold my home and ran off with the profits. So.
Hold on 1 second. We're going to end this now, and I want to make sure people can get a hold of you. It's holyvirus.net, but is there any other way they can get a hold of you if they want to pursue this with you?
Yes, they can always just write to the publisher, Holy Virus Publisher. Just mainly if they go to the website, they'll find a way to contact me.
Alrighty. Again, I appreciate it, Lionel, and maybe we'll talk next month and continue on with this. I appreciate your work. And the book really has changed my life and how I understood things. And this perspective is not just spiritual, but going into... economical. So again, thanks a lot. We will talk to you next time. We'll be right back after this.